Committee, and welcome members, and welcome to those of you in the audience. The first item on today's agenda is House Joint Resolution 16, so we will open a public hearing and a possible work session on HCR 16. And it looks like, Jim, you have a summary for us?
Thank you, sir. Yeah. House Joint Resolution 16 commends participants in Intel International Science and Engineering Fair for their dedication to pursuit of scientific knowledge and their excellence in science and math.
Okay. Well, we'll bring up three folks at a time, if we may. Let me see. That's Dick Knight, Mark Knight, Eve Minger. Did I say that correctly? Yes, please. Sorry, Jim. You can come up and lead us off.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jim Craven, representing the American Electronics Association. I'm just going to allow this panel to come and explain this exciting event that's coming to Portland next year. My only introduction is to say that in a time where we only hear, or mostly hear, doom and gloom about our educational topics, and certainly you wrestle with that, and a lot of issues with funding and such, I think you're going to hear a story today that's an exciting story about something positive happening here in Oregon next year. We're not asking you for any money, so you can sit back and relax and just hear a positive message about something that's going right in Oregon, and it's a very exciting event. And we thank you for introducing this joint resolution, urge you to move it along. I'm sure it will mean a lot to the kids from all over the world who are coming to Oregon next year, your endorsement and recognition. So thank you, and I'll let the panelists come.
Okay, thank you.
Chairman Blackland, members of the Educational Committee, I'm Eve Menger. I'm the president of Youth Exploring Science and a founding director. Youth Exploring Science is a not-for-profit incorporated in Oregon. I live at 1414 Southwest 3rd Avenue in Portland. We call Youth Exploring Science, yes, the acronym. And the YES mission is really pretty simple. It's to bring the research experience to more of Oregon's youth. I know many of you on the panel are educators or have served on school boards, and so I think you may share our passion for this type of learning experience. We believe that directly engaging in research is a wonderful way to learn science, and that in doing research, students learn a set of skills that is applicable to many problems, technical and non-technical. And maybe most important, students learn that science is a living human endeavor. It's not just a bunch of facts in a textbook that they have to memorize. For many students, doing research is an eye-opening experience. For some, it's really a life-changing experience. I have, by way of example, a young woman on my board who is the daughter of migrant workers from Nyssa, Oregon. She was blessed by having a very special teacher who encouraged her to participate in science fairs, and she did well. She won a four-year scholarship to Pacific University. She continued to get her law degree, and she is now the chief attorney at InFocus. So I'm not exaggerating when I say life-changing. YES has been successful in bringing the Intel International Science and Engineering Fair to Portland in 2004, and we've been fortunate in recruiting Applied Materials as a presenting sponsor. Now, the science fair, which we call ICEF, again using the acronym, it's been held annually for over 50 years, and yet many people haven't heard about it. And that's because it hasn't been held in the Northwest since 1962, when it was in Seattle. And furthermore, The only way a student could get to the international fair would be to win at a local affiliated fair. And 2 years ago, Oregon only had one affiliated fair. We could send three projects to the international fair from the whole state. And the other states in the Northwest were not much better. Washington had three affiliated fairs, and Idaho didn't have any. So another activity of YES has been to create more affiliated fairs in Oregon. And we're really delighted. This year there's five fairs. And by 2004, we expect to double that number. The fair will bring over 1,200 students from every state in the union, just about, from 40 countries internationally, along with their teachers. It will bring a host of distinguished scientists. There's a dozen or so Nobel laureates who attend and work with the students. They have lunch with the students. It's really phenomenal. The kids get to see their heroes. And I would mention that we call it the Science Fair. It covers all branches of science, including the social and behavioral sciences. And during that week of the fair, there's also a number of workshops that are held for the students and for teachers. So it's a real enriching experience for all involved. We also plan to have, we're seeking funds to bring, we feel we can bring 10,000 local high school students to the fair on public day. So 10,000 kids will be able to go through the fair. And we're trying to work out, for students who live too far, we're trying to work out the ability for them to attend virtually. And we're developing some curriculum material so when the students attend either physically or virtually that they have some materials tied to some CAM standards that make it a really important learning experience. So the fair itself lasts only a week, but it leaves a lasting legacy, and I think that's why all of us who are working so hard on this are really working on it. So I'd like to close by reading a portion of a letter from my counterpart from the fair in 2001, which was held in Detroit. And I asked that person, what were the benefits of the fair? And he wrote me, and I quote now from his letter, "It was difficult to answer your question because there are so many facets to the fair. Of course, there's significant benefit to the city's businesses, hotels, restaurants, and shops. The Detroit Chamber of Commerce was a big supporter of the fair for that reason." He continues, "But I supported the ISEF for different reasons, ones that are more difficult to quantify or even articulate. The fair requires cooperation among the many communities, industry, academia, middle and high school teachers and administrators, and the community at large. In the process of hosting the fair, we also created a vibrant infrastructure of all the stakeholders interested in enhancing education. This has been a gift to the entire state of Michigan. If Science Service ever decided to hold ISEF in one location permanently, we would love for it to be Detroit. This is the legacy we want to leave for Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to address you, and I'd be happy to try to answer questions." By the way, I forgot. We're so proud that we have all these fairs, and we're going to have this big group of kids coming that we call them Team Oregon, and we've got Team Oregon shirts. So we're going to have 40 or 50 kids there from Oregon, all over the state. In 2004. Thank you.
Eve, I would say one thing at this point. It's certainly clear to me, and I'm sure to all the committee members, that you're extremely enthusiastic about this project and very proud of the fact that Oregon, Portland, will be hosting this. And obviously the benefits of the program are outstanding. So it's really nice to hear you to speak to those things, and it shows through loudly and clearly, let's say.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chairman Backlund and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Martin Knight. I'm from 15218 Southwest Pleasant Valley Road Beaverton, Oregon, and I had the honor and great privilege to participate in the 2002 Intel International Science and Engineering Fair. And I've got a fantastic experience to share with you. Before I continue with what I've written down, I was just listening to what Eve had to say, and it's amazing how much of that fits directly in with my own experience, the benefits she was talking about to writing, to speaking, and motivation. It's really all there. So, for my project, I did the initial research at the Oregon Graduate Institute under the enthusiastic guidance of Dr. Jody House, who's an assistant professor in the Electrical and Computer Engineering Department. In the course of my work, I learned many technical things. For example, the difference between a soft bake and a hard bake, the gases used for diffusion and oxidation, the crystal orientation of wafers, and how to use an atomic force microscope. However, I also learned many critical lessons that were not in the library's textbooks. By participating in the research and development process, I acquired an entirely different view of engineering. I no longer had to ask what an engineer did, but rather how they found time to eat or sleep. And by working closely with an active professor, I became intimately familiar with the academic career path, how to prepare for such a career, and what to expect when employed by a university. Before this work, I never realized the difficulty of writing a grant or the excitement of having a grant approved. As the cliche goes, I wasn't aware of how little I knew until I really started learning. My first month in the laboratory left me with an urgent need to solve a math problem that became very personally important to me, and that was finding the volume of an expanding membrane. Discussions with graduate students and my high school calculus teacher left me with one unavoidable conclusion. I would need to take higher-level math courses and upper-level physics courses before I could solve this thorny problem. This need for additional physics and math, motivated by a real-world problem, has been driving me to higher standards in my academic work. This past term in college, I completed Calculus III and am planning on majoring in physics. As my research was concluding, and I say concluding advisedly since it appears that research never actually concludes, I participated in the Northwest Science Expo and was lucky enough to win a chance to compete at ICEF. From a student's perspective, ICEF is an extraordinary event to attend. The opening events were organized to encourage student interaction. During those first few days, I felt an endorphin rush as I spoke with students from Mexico, China, Japan, Puerto Rico, and India. By the end of the week, I'd held conversations and traded pens with students from most of the 39 countries attending the fair. The social fun was balanced with intellectual fun. Speaking with the judges, Nobel laureates, military personnel, and industry professionals created personal, in-depth views of the varied possibilities for a career in math, science, or engineering. ICEF boosted my academic motivation, provided valuable college preparation, and gave me my first thrill of real research. I would encourage you to make this fantastic opportunity available for all Oregon students. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Mark, I have one question. You were speaking with students from Mexico, China, Japan, Puerto Rico, and India. How did you communicate?
In whichever language the people felt like communicating. It turned out a fair number of those students spoke English, but some of them were more comfortable in their own language. I studied Spanish in high school and made an effort to hold conversations in both languages. At one point, I was outside the judging hall and was talking to a student, and I was speaking Spanish because they could piece together my Spanish, and they were speaking English. And that way we both got to do one language. And when anybody walked by, we got the most odd looks because nobody could figure out exactly what was going on. So whichever language was currently handy was what we spoke.
Okay.
I expect we don't have time to get into the crystal orientation of wafers. Is that right?
I can give you a quick rundown. There's a lot of them.
It would take longer than a quick.
And it makes a big difference.
You may be providing us more information than we can handle. I'm not sure. Well, very good.
Thank you.
Chairman Backlund, members of the committee, I'm Dick Knight, 1528 Southwest Pleasant Valley Road, Beaverton, Oregon, representing Youth Exploring Science, and I also co-chair the committee that's bringing Intel ISAF to Portland in May of 2004, and I'd like to speak in favor of the proposed resolution. My personal first contact with ISAF occurred last year as a result of Mark's opportunity to participate. I attended the event in Louisville, Kentucky, and during the course of it, I had the opportunity to observe his experience and also the experience of the other Oregon students that attended. In my opinion, these students personify many of the things that are being done right in Oregon education. And it was gratifying to see every single one of the students we took from Oregon receive an award at this prestigious event. The quality of the work and of the students was exceptional. We may be one of the very few groups where every student received an award. I would also say the impact on my son was dramatic, as he's just testified. The experience broadens a student's horizons, and it's rich in learning opportunities in areas such as critical thinking, writing, and speaking skills, as well as science and math. I return convinced that this type of research experience should be made available to as many of our Oregon students as possible. Intel ISAF is a signature event that brings visitors, distinguished guests, international press coverage, and $8 to $10 million of economic impact to the state. More important, it's a focal point for excellence in education that we're already using to create a lasting legacy for our students. We currently are already seeing these benefits. 2 years ago, as Eve mentioned, Oregon only had one science fair that was eligible to send students to Intel ISAF, while other states of comparable size had created more than 10 times as many opportunities for their students. Our initial goal was to increase the number of opportunities by forming four new fairs by May of 2004. Driven largely by the excitement of knowing that Intel ISAF was coming to Oregon, communities have begun organizing in the state at a much faster rate than we had ever dared hope. In fact, we've already met this year the goal of having five fairs in the state, and by next year we expect to have 10 or 11 in communities across the state. The impact of Intel ISAF, however, is not limited to just those students who will win the opportunity to attend as finalists. We're making plans to bring up to 10,000 of our students in for a day's visit where they'll be able to meet the finalists, have discussions with them, discuss their projects in person. Our universities plan to attend and showcase the academic programs and research opportunities that are available to students who choose to study here. Distinguished guests will participate in education workshops that will be open to our teachers and science specialists. And we intend to use internet and video technology to make it possible for students everywhere in the state, regardless of physical distance, to participate in at least portions of Intel ISAF 2004. But so far, I have actually omitted what may well be the most important element in the ongoing legacy we're trying to create. It will take 1,000 PhD-level professionals to judge the student exhibits. We are very fortunate in the state of Oregon that we have the wealth of intellectual talent that will let us assemble this many judges. And in fact, the Oregon Health Sciences University and the Oregon University System have already signed up to take the lead role in assembling this imposing pool of talent, which spans the entire range of sciences. From past years, we know that these volunteer judges will be very impressed with the students they meet and that they will leave the event excited at what high school students can do. Our key goal is to capture this enthusiasm and to involve as many of these excited judges as possible in an ongoing basis by connecting them with opportunities to be mentors themselves. We expect that these professionals will create many, many more opportunities for Oregon students long after ISAF 2004 is over. I'm leaving with you this morning a CD containing a 5-minute video of a previous event. Please enjoy this if you can find time in what I'm sure this year are incredibly busy schedules. In any event, please feel free to share with any of your constituents that you think might be interested. We would be very pleased to work with them to ensure that the educational experiences that you've heard described are brought to every community in the state that would like to become involved. The young people of our state are remarkable, and they can do astonishing things if given appropriate support and encouragement. In hosting Intel ISAF, we have the opportunity opportunity to create a legacy that will enrich the education of many students and the economy of our entire state. I urge you to help with this effort by supporting the proposed resolution. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in front of the committee, and I'd be pleased to answer any questions you might have.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wonderful, exciting testimony. You have us all excited, I can assure you. My question is, Mikard, how is the information about this project being disseminated to the 198 school districts and private schools, too, I assume, throughout the state?
That is probably one of our larger challenges at the moment. We have, at this point, 20 committees performing various functions, including a PR committee. So we're using this leveraged network of volunteers. We actually have a reception on the Portland State campus as part of the upcoming Northwest Science Expo. We're in communication with the Oregonian, and we expect good coverage, and that will be kind of an initial launch. And then we have some other press coverage following. We have a number of the statewide educators involved in our coordinating committee. Jill Kirk, who you may know, Susan Castillo, and from the Portland School District, Lou Frederick. So we're reaching out in every way we can. We'll soon have a website up with information. But frankly, one of our real interests and concerns is to get the word out as early as we can so that communities have the chance to organize in time to participate this coming year as well as in succeeding years.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there specific written criteria for participating, and if so, how will that be disseminated?
Yes, there are. We have mentioned these local fairs that can send students. These are what are termed affiliated fairs. If you use any of the web search engines, look under ICEF, it'll take you very quickly to a website that has the criteria on it. Basically, though, it involves two things. It involves the community that sponsors the fair committing that they will send their winners to the international event, which means they need to raise some funds for that. And the second commitment is that the research be done under a set of fairly rigorous rules of scientific ethics, both for the safety of the participants and to ensure that appropriate ethics are implemented. In order to help that happen, I should say that it's amazing what just a very small amount of money does in these communities on occasion. Youth Exploring Science has been providing new communities that are starting these fairs with a small amount to help them over that hurdle the first year. And recently, Intel actually pledged some additional funds to fairs that are started by either a university or a public school district. So that's kind of how it's happening.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that. We have Harvey Matthews.
Good afternoon, Chair Backlund, members of the committee. Thank you very much for hearing HGR 16. This was an idea that was born out of Eve's enthusiasm at a meeting last summer and was fortunately picked up by Chair Backlund and put into resolution form. It was the intent of this resolution that we'd be able to hand this out to the students at the fair so they know we appreciate their efforts for education in general, but also to come to our fair state and spread some of their knowledge and love of knowledge. It will also be very useful as people that have just testified go about and solicit monetary contributions as well. So what you're doing today is very important. And this does fit into overall what we're doing as a state. I think as we struggle with high standards of SIM and CAM, maintain our K-12 funding stability, help our universities achieve more freedom in their entrepreneurial activity, help with the streamlining of the tech transfer process, find capital for new businesses, and as we discuss certain tax incentives to get research-based companies located here, this is all part of building a knowledge infrastructure here in the state. And this SGR 16 is certainly a key building block in that. So I would urge your yes vote, and we thank you for it. And thank you, Chair Backlund, for sponsoring this bill.
Okay. Well, I get to, before you leave, Harvey, I get to editorialize a bit. One, I would like to thank Harvey Matthews for suggesting that that we embrace this, and I thought it was an excellent idea, and so the result of that is HJR 16. So I thank you for that opportunity. When I was teaching, we had a very dynamic chemistry teacher, and they were very active in research chemistry. And so I shared those same students in Advanced Placement U.S. History, so I saw and read a great deal about some of their really dramatic research projects from one high school, and of course other students did the same. So so I certainly appreciate what research and these kinds of projects can accomplish. And finally, a comment about Jim Craven's comment that this is wonderful, there's no money involved. I would say it gives us a chance to take an old adage, we're going to take a negative and we're going to turn it into a positive. So that's our goal here. So with all of that, thank you very much. Well, with that, we will close the public hearing on HJR 16 and we'll open a work session on HJR 16. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Joint Resolution 16 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Representative Hobson has moved HJR 16 for adoption, and we would move this then to the floor for adoption following this committee meeting. Any discussion? Representative Avakian.
Just a couple comments, if I might. It just is so wonderful to see, I mean, this program before us and for you to allow the state of Oregon and for us to be a part of the great things that you're doing, and not just because of the partnership that you can see with industry, but just the fact that you recognize the limitless potential of young minds and that there is something that is really fostering that kind of excellence in young adults in Oregon. And second, I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for sponsoring the bill, and also recognize Intel. Intel obviously is very, you know, much a part of this, but also, and I mention Intel just because it's largely in my district and I'm very familiar with the extraordinary works that they have done, not just with this project, but with public schools in general and other similar programs in our district. And to see all of that come together in this resolution, I just think is a great thing for us to be a part of.
Good. Thank you.
Bravo, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott?
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, any further discussion? Gina, could you call the roll, please?
Aye.
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 Aye. I declare that the chair declares that we've received a constitutional majority, and HJR 16 is passed. And I will appoint a carrier for this bill, and I will appoint myself to carry this to the floor. Any objections? No. Okay, thank you very much. Moving on, then, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2807.
Good afternoon.
Jim, do you want to give us a summary, please?
Yes, sir. House Bill 2807 forms Eastern Oregon Collaborative Colleges Center for the purpose of increasing access to post-secondary education for students in Eastern Oregon. Appropriates money from the general fund to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development for Eastern Oregon Collaborative Colleges Center, effective July 1, 2003.
Okay. Representative Smith, would you like to lead off?
Thank you, Chair Backlund, Vice Chair Hobson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Oregon State Representative Greg Smith. I have the distinct pleasure of representing District 57, which includes Union, Umatilla, Wallowa, and Morrow counties. And I truly am honored to be here today to testify in favor of House Bill 2807. 2807 is good government, and that is, it's bringing together the Eastern Oregon University, Blue Mountain Community College, and Treasure Valley Community College to come together to form a partnership to ensure that we're able to provide access to as many students as possible. It's going to encourage the use of distance learning and the sharing of resources. To my left is President Phil Creighton, the president of Eastern Oregon University, and to my right is President Jim Sorensen from Treasure Valley Community College. And behind me is Mr. Art Hill, who's the vice president at Blue Mountain Community College. And I'm going to actually turn to them for greater detail in the testimony today. But I do want you to know that this is a good deal for rural Eastern Oregon. It's going to serve approximately 800 students throughout the 12 easternmost counties, of which I point out 90% of them will continue to live and work and reside in Eastern Oregon. My hope is that you will see favor to pass this bill to either today or in the near future, and to send it to the Ways and Means Committee so they can further prioritize their needs as it relates to community college funding and higher ed funding. But I hope you will give us due consideration today. So thank you, Chair Backlund.
Thank you very much. Representative Smith, I see Representative Jensen has come in. Might he take your place?
He is much more capable to take my place, Representative Jensen.
Thank you.
And then we turn to committee.
Okay, very good.
Thank you, Chair Backlund. And just a comment, Representative Smith's flattery is duly noted, and we are therefore now deeply indebted to Representative Smith, and I'm not sure what the chit is that he's going to throw at me for that, but for the record, I'm Bob Jensen, State Representative from District 58, which includes, among many smaller communities, the cities of Pendleton and Hermiston. As a consequence of this, at least two of the two major campuses of Blue Mountain Community College are directly in my district. For those of you who may have some familiarity with my background, you would be aware of the fact that I spent 26 years on staff at Blue Mountain Community College. Therefore, obviously, my comments and statements here today are based not only on a wealth of background and experience with this, but also totally and purely objective. having said that, the EOCCC, as it is known, is I think one of the really significant and great accomplishments that has come forth in the state of Oregon as far as reaching out to otherwise unserviced or underserviced students. I know that we like to think about the community colleges working with the four-year universities. But I know of no example in this state where this is done or has been done with the degree of success and efficiency that you'd find in the programs that exist between these three very fine schools. Like Representative Smith, both of the presidents here are going to be able to speak specifically to a number of the issues and a number of the things that happen, and I'm not going to presuppose, even with that wealth of background and knowledge that I have about this topic, that I understand and am as familiar with many of these things as they are, because it has been a couple of years, and you all know what happens when you get over 50 or 55, I mean, one of the things you recall isn't as good as it was, so I'll leave those things up to them. But I do urge you, to consider this and consider it very seriously. I have heard rumors spreading throughout the building by some legislators that Eastern Oregon was the recipient of many great things and good things because of a variety of circumstances of the last legislative session, perhaps because of leadership or whatever, you know, it might have been. I would submit to you that neither of the gentlemen on my left or right will be able to give you much of, for examples of how Eastern Oregon fared any better, if as well as the rest of the state of Oregon during this past 2 years. Certainly, the failure of this body to fund this program, even though it was promised to us, it was promised directly to me, the failure to fund it at the last session put a real serious dent in the ability of Eastern Oregon State University, Blue Mountain, Treasure Valley, to be able to carry out the mission that they had worked very hard to develop, and one that they had developed successfully, and they will be able to tell you of a number of the merits or the success stories that that they had with the program. So, again, thank you very much for indulging me with my testimony here today, and I appreciate, and I know that this committee, under the capable leadership of Representative Chair Backlund and Vice Chair Hobson, will, and all of the members, will look very carefully at this, and I'm confident that you'll see the wisdom when you have heard their testimonies. Thank you very much.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I would say that Representative Jensen learned well from Representative Smith.
Representative, I have a question, and it may be one that you choose not to answer, but you indicated that a promise was made to you. Are you at liberty to say who made that promise, or what happened to it? I know there's the old saying, there's many a slip between the cup and the lip. And,
I think perhaps it was not that representative, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. I think it was in the closing hours of every legislative session. Things happen, and some of the commitments that were made may go unfulfilled. I certainly am not making an accusation. The only thing I'm trying to set forth with this is that when you look at the special favors that may be attributed to Eastern Oregon, I point to one that wound up not only not being a special favor, but a commitment was unfulfilled in it, without any accusation of anyone intending to do wrong in the process. Far be it for me to make that statement. I certainly wouldn't.
Okay, thank you.
Chairman Backlund, Vice Chair Hobson, members of the committee, I'm Phil Creighton. I'm from Eastern Oregon University, and it's a privilege to be here today to talk about the EOCCC. This bill is very, very dear to us in Eastern Oregon, and although I can't promise you, like Jim Craven did, that it won't cost you anything, I can promise the chair's comment that we want to turn a negative to a positive. We want to turn this from a negative to a positive. In 1997, the legislature funded the EOCCC to provide educational services to educationally disadvantaged people of Eastern Oregon. Our service district, to put this in proportion for you, is equal to the size of Pennsylvania. In that state size, there's one four-year institution and two community colleges. Those institutions have come together in a unique fashion. In fact, it's a national model for collaboration for institutions to provide services to individuals that otherwise would not have opportunities for college education.
The bill was funded in 1997 at $2.5 million per biennium, and it was continued for funding until, as Representative Johnson said, until the last session. We have five major programs up and running where students can receive a degree from Eastern Oregon University or from Blue Mountain or from Treasure Valley at any of the three sites. Those are given in a seamless fashion where one student registers once for courses, once for financial aid, once for advising, and everything else is seamless between the three institutions. This model provides educational services now, starting at a low of 50 students in 1997 to 800 students plus in 2002. So it's been a highly successful program. Each year, I am moved tremendously by the letters and comments I get from people in small communities of Eastern Oregon who write and say that without the opportunities provided by the EOCCC, they would have never had the opportunity to get college education. And I think reaching out and serving the people without concern of ownership or without concern of where the degree is coming from, but only with the commitment of providing services to Eastern Oregon, is a testimony to the three institutions involved and to the confidence the legislature placed in us at that time in 1997. What we're asking for this is to restore funding to the EOCCC so that we may continue to provide that service to rural Oregon. Thank you very much. I'll be delighted to answer any questions that you may have.
Dr. Creighton, what will happen if this thing is not, if this program is not funded? What will happen to those 800 students, those students who are currently involved in the program?
Without the current maintenance, Mr. Chair, the programs will diminish. The first thing it suffers is the articulation because we don't have the computer services to support the joint registrations and so on and the joint financial aid. The second thing that will suffer is the costly delivery of distance education programs to the rural communities. That is an expense that this program covers. What we're asking for are dollars only for program delivery. We're not asking for administrative cost or travel or personnel cost at all. Thank you.
Chair Backlund, Vice Chair Hobson, members of the committee. My name is Art Hill. I'm the Vice President, and my responsibility at Blue Mountain Community College is customized training, but beyond that, extended learning and distance courses, delivery and content throughout our service area. As you may be aware, our service area, as President Creighton indicated, is about the size of Pennsylvania. We serve, our college alone serves an area of approximately 18,000 square miles with a population of 130,000 people. There is, you know, with one of the interesting numbers that we pulled out of that is that there are only 7.6 people per square mile in that territory. Some of the metropolitan areas in this state have hundreds, and in metropolitan areas in the Midwest and East, you're seeing more like 7,000 or 8,000 per square mile. The point of that is that the cost of delivery and development of programs in those areas is dynamically and dramatically higher than it is in other areas more densely populated. The second lesson from that is that the program brings to the residents of those areas skills and degree qualifications that are front and center in the economic recovery of this state. I think President Creighton commented that, or perhaps it was Representative Smith commented that over 90% of the people who go through this program remain in the area where they receive their education. That is our engine of economic development. Those are the people who do the jobs who recover, who are responsible for the recovery of our economy. These are nurses. These are technicians. These are business managers and owners. These are people like a director who reports to me who put her two sons through both BMCC and Eastern, and then herself received degrees from both institutions under this program last year. Otherwise impossible, under her circumstances with working in our area and trying to go to school. So these are the real stories, the human stories behind this program. I have provided you with a copy of a letter from our president, President Travis Kirkland of Blue Mountain, and I will refer to just a couple of the parts of that letter briefly. One of them is that the state's return on investment in the program has been rapid and dramatic. The students, you asked about the students who are in the program now and what will happen to them. What will happen to them if the program continues is that those students who are in there right now will be holding jobs in our communities, not within 5 or 6 or 7 years, but within 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, the very time that we will require their skills for the economic recovery of our state. So one thing I would point out is that these numbers come home very quickly in terms of rapid and dramatic return on investment. Another number that we didn't talk about was that in the beginning of the program in 1998, there were only about 50 students who were co-enrolled at the two or three institutions, but two of the three institutions at the same time. That number is now in the 300-plus range. So when you look at the numbers of students served, that's another good one to remember. I would summarize by saying that the presidents, administrators, faculty, and staff of our institutions are solidly behind this for the sake of our students. As President Creighton remarked, these dollars in this program go to program development, not to administration. There are administrative benefits that we derive from it by sharing resources, but therein lies the national model that President Creighton talked about, and therein lies a side benefit of the program. We can choose to do nothing. We can choose, as President Kirkland says, to pass the burden of diminished access to higher education entirely back to our students and say, find it wherever you can. We are no longer in a position to provide that access. Or we can take this step to ensure that this access that's already a proven program continue for the benefit of our students, our region, and our state. Thank you very much, and I'd be pleased to answer any questions you have.
Thank you.
Representative Backlund, Vice Chair Hobson, members of the committee. I'm Jim Sorensen. I'm President of Treasure Valley Community College in Ontario, Oregon. It's a pleasure to be here today to speak in behalf of House Bill 2807. Again, I've been in the institution in Ontario for the past 3 years, serving as Vice President and stepping in as President this past summer. It's a pleasure to speak on behalf of this. I came out of the state of Washington and had a lot of opportunities to working with four-year and community colleges in that state. But I can tell you it oftentimes did not happen in a collaborative fashion. And this organization or collaboration has been in existence since 1997. It's a very positive one, and I would hope that would deserve continued authorization for funding in the upcoming biennium. We in Treasure Valley, and I'll speak specifically of Valier County, we have had graduates from Burns and Lakeview, and it's always very gratifying to sometimes see them for the first time when they're on campus for graduation, and to hear those stories, as others have iterated, is very crucial to the success of those rural, often place-bound students that we deal with. In Valier County, we deal with the highest poverty rate in the state, we deal with the highest unemployment rate in the state, and we deal with some of the lowest test scores in the state. So any opportunities that we can to help students achieve higher level careers and transfer education onto four-year institutions that this provides, I personally believe is something that should be supported not only by our own institutions, and we do support this internally even within the funding we have, but the enhanced funding that this provides offers us that edge that we need to really meet those rural students' needs in these areas. We as an institution have lost 33% of our funding in the past 3 year period that I've been there. I happened to come in May of 2000 and immediately began to deal with budget cuts. So sometimes you wonder, you know, be careful what you wish for, you may get it. But I think more importantly, we deal with that, and we will always continue to deal with whatever we are dealt in our institutions. But it is very important that we have funding to meet the needs of this rural environment. We do operate at a higher cost level than you do in an urban environment. I served both on the I-5 corridor. I served in a smaller institution in Washington. I served in one in Seattle. I've dealt with both urban and rural situations, and I can tell you that dealing with ruralness of Eastern Oregon is a very different situation, and certainly exacerbates the delivery of education to those students in those place-bound areas. We continue to work very hard and trying to continually meet the students' needs, and we would encourage you to provide that funding that really provides the edge for us to make that an excellent delivery system, one that continues to be collaborative on, and one that is a very strong and ongoing partnership. So, again, from our area, I would encourage you to support that and would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure to whom the question should go, but on your handout, you have the map. And I know we're not allowed to use colored printing here, so I have to ask for some clarification. Am I right in that on the lower right-hand corner where it lists Baker City, John Day, et cetera, those are the centers that are currently in operation, and then the expanded communities are the ones that are the proposed sites?
That's correct, Vice Chair Hobson.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you
very much. Thank you. Committee, we put this down as a public hearing because we all know the difficulty of funding a program in our current economic climate. But I was supportive initially before I heard the testimony today, and hearing it today makes for a compelling case. So I think we'll talk with some key people. We'll talk to some Ways and Means folks, the speaker, and see if there's any way we can facilitate moving this on to Ways and Means. So if anyone has any suggestions or comments along those lines, that would be fine. I'd be happy to hear them. But that's kind of what my intentions are.
Great. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had an opportunity to visit with our guests this morning and also found the program to be both intriguing and quite impressive in what it's accomplished. The question I asked to them and to some of the other sponsors of the bill was pretty blunt, and that is, how do we pay for it? And I would love to support this program if, as we have those conversations, some mechanism for funding it, either by prioritizing it higher than some other program that's funded or by finding new revenue, is brought forward. But I'm hesitant to offer false hope if there isn't really an identified way of paying for the program.
Understood. I would say, too, that as I've discovered, that we did not fund this in the 2001 session. I think probably that slipped by pretty much everybody's attention. And so it seems a kind of a tragedy that in this current climate, we have suffered since July of 2001, I believe, a bit more than a $2 billion decline in revenue. So that's very sobering and very difficult on programs. But I guess I would offer that, as I said to Dr. Creighton, if one never tries, one will not succeed.
Right.
So I think it's an idea that has to be out there, and it's a project that that needs to be pursued. So, Representative Hobson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I concur, actually, with what everybody said. That's not too difficult. My question is perhaps for Cam. I notice she's in the back of the room acting like we can't see her there. And I agree this is a wonderful program and probably should be replicated even in other parts of the states, but also knowing the extreme needs of other community colleges, which I, too, did share with our guests earlier this morning. Is there any consideration or any way that the community college group as a whole could look at readjusting their resources? Again, I know you have lots of good programs. I'm probably putting you on the spot. But is there any discussion going on with the community colleges on any reallocation of funds?
As Cam comes up and referencing Representative Hobson's comment about hiding back there, reminds me of Joe Lewis back in the old days of a fight with Billy Kahn. He said, "You can run, but you can't hide." And sure enough, Joe Lewis did catch up with him. So anyway, Pam is here. Cam is here, excuse me.
For the record, Cam Preuss-Frawley, Commissioner of Community Colleges. To directly answer your question, Representative Hobson, the answer is no, we have not gone about prioritizing programs within the colleges or even collaboratives among colleges and universities. Thinking has been since the 2001 legislative session that we were about funding students first, and that local control being in play, that the local college would then devise and determine how they would use the resources that they received on a per student basis to fund the projects. I would also concur with much of what has been said here today, that EOCCC, as it is known by those who know and love it, is an extraordinary partnership. I have had opportunity to visit on site and talk with students who are recipients of, and I too wish I could print money because it is well deserving of the effort and the resource that they have received. But it has not been prioritized one above another because we are leaving that decision to the local institutions.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the risk of not living up to the wonderful young man who was here before, but my basic math in dividing the appropriation of $2,250,000, whatever it is, by 800, which actually isn't an FTE, it's a number of students that would be considered in this, it does come out to 1,500 students. Am I doing that? Actually, probably a lot more than that, because those aren't 800 students. They're 800 individuals rather than full-time equivalents, so it would be considerably more than 1,500 a student.
A year.
Right. I already divided for the biennium.
Yes. Come up, please. Yeah. Dr. Creighton, yeah. Please come on up.
Welcome. Can I leave?
Well, Cam, thank you. You may not have expected to testify, but we thank you for your information.
Chairman Backlund, Vice Chair Hobson, that is 800 students per term. On a year, we usually serve around 1,300 students per year. So it does reduce your quotient a little bit there.
I knew that would be wrong.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Yes, Representative Nolan.
While you're here, let's be clear about that, though. That's number of bodies, but it isn't a full-time equivalent, right?
That's correct.
So some of those students may take only one course in 1 year.
The average course load, Representative Nolan, is about 6 credits per term.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Abakian.
Without us doing the math, do you know what the answer is on the cost per student or per credit hour or per body, however it may be calculated?
Representative Abakian, no, I do not. Perhaps my colleagues do, though. I could ask them.
We're working on the numbers. And note also, that is that the 2.24, that is
quite okay. Mm-hmm. Art, could you come on up and so we can get you on the record?
Sure. Yeah.
I did divide that.
Yeah, you did.
Again, and doing the calculation of the per student.
And please cost. Announce your name again.
Again, Art Hill, Blue Mountain Community College, Vice President of Customized Training. The observation on the per term is further qualified by the acknowledgement that the biennium amount, that is the 2.4 biennially, has to be divided by not the 1,500, just the 1,500 estimated per year, but the 3,000 that would equate to in 2 years. So it would, again, half the amount per student, the cost per student of providing that benefit. And I think they're working with the calculators right now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Shall we wait for those calculations, or are we?
I don't need
them.
I
don't. Okay. It would be helpful, though, if we could get a brief.
Yeah.
Please.
Well, we may adjourn, but it would be good if we could get the information and
like
Jim
to do so then.
Yeah, yes. Jim can get that to us.
Great.
Well, very good. Thank you very much, gentlemen, and thank you, Kim. With that, then we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2807. and we will close the committee meeting.
Hey.